I, Tom, am about to embark on an historic journey. What am I thinking of? I almost forgot to bring my shovel. Oh. Oh my god. They found me. I don't know how, but they found me. Run for it, Josh!
But who? Who?
Who do you think? The Order of No Quarter!
Josh, we're a few hours out from the first reveal at the PS5 hardware in the little Road to PS5 presentation that they aired on YouTube today.
Yeah. That was a thing that happened.
I guess this was supposed to happen at the Game Developers Conference, which was canceled because of coronavirus, because this was very much a tech-heavy presentation. And, like, if you had YouTube chat up during the live stream, you saw all these people who were like, show us the games, where are the games? And it just, the presentation was just not supposed to be that, clearly. But what did you think? What did you think of it?
Well, Mark Cerny said it best, you know, we don't need to worry about teraflops. You know, it's not a way of judging how well your system's going to perform, as they're showing a sign of 2 teraflops on their little TV next to them. Even though weeks ago, Xbox announced that their system's going to have 12 teraflops, which means that the system's going to be like 6 times more powerful. And I'm just like, well, I understand why you're saying it's not important, but fact check yourself a little bit there, guys.
Yeah. I mean, hey, sometimes it's not the tools. It's how you use them, you know.
Yeah. So saying how it's going to be backwards compatible with PlayStation 4, PlayStation 4 Pro games.
Yes.
Where the Xbox Series X is going to be backwards compatible with the entire Xbox family of games.
Yes.
Because that makes sense, right? Let's only talk about the previous generation and saying, oh, well, it doesn't matter. Like, I feel like Xbox right now, the wording that they're doing is so much better, so much clearer. They have the higher ground in this situation, in this console war already.
True. But Sony has kind of clearly won this generation, and I think they have a lot of goodwill going into the next gen. So I think it's going to come down to just who gets out first and who, like you said, makes the most transparent case for which is worth buying.
Right.
I was thinking about getting a PS4, but now I'm like, why don't I just get a PS5 and then I can buy PS4 games and I'll be covered, you know?
Exactly.
But I'm definitely personally getting the Xbox Series X because I've had an Xbox since the 360 days, so I've got this library of games lying around, and if you're telling me a console's going to be compatible with 3 generations, I'm like, yeah, of course I'm going to get this, you know?
Yeah, like, why wouldn't you go backwards compatible? Like, I understand that they screwed up when it came to the PS3 era with the certain chip that they used inside of it, but it's sad because there's so many great PlayStation games, but it's like, well, hold on, you gotta dust off your PS2 or dust off your PS3 to go back and play this, or I can just go and drop any of my Xbox discs into my Xbox One or Xbox Series X and start playing it. And I love that, like, Cyberpunk announced that if you buy Cyberpunk for the Xbox One, you're going to be able to play it on the Series X as well. You buy the game one time and it's good for both systems. Like, nice. Okay, yeah. Thank you. But, like, is that going to translate over to PlayStation as well?
We'll have to see. We'll have to see. It's almost like they don't care about us, the consumers. That's crazy, though.
No. They only care about the stocks. You know what I mean? The shareholders. That's what matters most. Why do, like, we're the ones that are, you know, funding all of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of funding, this is a Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today we're going to be talking about Kickstarter's most successful, I would say, game.
If not financially successful, then this is at least the mascot for Kickstarted games. And that is what, Josh?
Oh, it is Shovel Knight. The game that has been, it's a game.
It is a game. But this is a game that for a while, until it was unseated, was your number one favorite game of all time. Is that false?
No, it is 100% true. And I mean, it Like, it goes back and forth. Like, is Celeste the best? Well, yeah, it is. But Shovel Knight, it's right there. Like, it just keeps creeping up. And then when they keep releasing new DLCs and it's like, hey, remember me? Hey, remember me? Like, I'm like, yeah, I know. You're still awesome.
It's don't, like, don't. It's like don't the old flame, less. The old love you can't get away from. It's like, yeah. Hey, baby, I'm back.
It's the high school sweetheart. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, let me handle the nitty gritty for you, Josh.
Then that's nice of you.
We can get into this because I know you were very excited to have this game be a topic, as excited as I was when Banjo-Kazooie was chosen.
Mm.
Hopefully this game doesn't cause as much of a rift between us. Shovel Knight was released on June 26, 2014 for Microsoft Windows and the Nintendo 3DS and Wii U systems, and eventually it was rolled out across iOS X in September of 2014, the PlayStation family of consoles in 2015, Xbox One in 2015. It's even on Amazon Fire in October of 2015, which I think is pretty interesting. And finally, the most recent release was March 3rd, 2017.
And the most requested platform, Tom, Linux.
Oh, of course, Linux. All those Linux people. I'm sure they, I don't know. I got no jokes for that. I just don't think of it that much, but
it's still PC games related, so
there we go. Yeah,
shame on you.
But this was developed and published by Yacht Club Games, and yeah, it became a possibility because of a successful crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter,
which I have a lot of information based off of the crowdfunding from Kickstarter too. Some things that made it into the game because of the people who backed it, so we'll talk about that in a little bit there.
Okay,
but what else you got for me?
Well, basically, for our listeners, if you're not familiar, Shovel Knight is a throwback to NES-era games. This is presented in a gorgeously rendered 8-bit style, but it does, you know, make sure that it focuses on those 8-bit elements, making sure, like, it doesn't overdo. Like, this is a game that I could mysteriously have seen been released in the late 90s, you know, as the NES's capabilities were like fully realized towards the end of its life cycle, you know? So it's got the look, it's got the sound design of those games. It plays a lot like the original Mega Man games, except the focus is not on shooting combat, but melee combat. I mean, there's some projectile-based weapons, but your main character has a trusty shovel blade, and that's his main means of combat.
Looking at the game, playing through the game and stuff like that, you'll automatically know that, yes, there's a lot of Mega Man references there. The map is set up very similar to Super Mario 3.
Mm-hmm.
The down pogo is from DuckTales.
Yes.
And pretty much traversing through the world is very similar to, like, Zelda 2.
Yes. So it's a mishmash.
Yeah, it's a mishmash of a lot of great games, minus Zelda 2, of the NES era.
So this was the first time I played it. I bought the collection last year when it was on sale. But tell us about your history with the series real quick, Josh, because mine's going to be short and simple, but I want to hear about yours.
Hold on. Hmm. Before we start talking about 2014, we got to get in that mindset.
Oh, that's right.
Of what happened in 2014.
Got to do the research questions. Okay.
So let's see if you're mentally prepared for 2014.
All right. Take me there.
What was the top grossing film of 2014?
Of 2014. Okay, that was the year of films such as Captain America the Winter Soldier and How to Train Your Dragon 2, Foxcatcher. I'm gonna say... was it a Hunger Games movie?
It was not.
Then it was Captain America Winter Soldier.
The answer is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, wow. Oh, doy. Well, a well-deserved, because that movie is really, really good.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yes, the sequel was better. But anyway.
Yes, we all can agree that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is better.
Yes.
It's a better movie.
Kurt Russell's in it. I mean, come on.
So staying with movies and television, what famous crossover happened in 2014?
Is this television or is it film?
It is television.
Oh, was this the Family Guy Simpsons episode?
It was the Family Guy Simpsons episode.
And it was not good. or at least I didn't think it was very good.
I never watched it, so I don't know.
The problem is that it was solely written by the Family Guy writing team. So, like, the Simpsons humor doesn't feel, like, natural. And it overall, the kind of, I don't know, I feel like it just didn't gel as a result.
And then this last one here, we're going to leave movies and television here. We're going to go to music.
Mm.
What musician accidentally released 8 seconds of White Noise on iTunes for $1.29?
Oh, I'm going to be straight with you. I have no idea, but that's pretty humorous. Who did that?
The answer is Miss Taylor Swift. The crazy thing about it, it became the number one hit in Canada almost immediately before being removed from iTunes.
So she made a significant amount of money based off of an accidental posting of nothing.
Yeah.
Wow. Just wow.
You can make money doing anything. I mean, it was the number one hit in Canada.
It just goes to show you that Taylor Swift is, like, on the level of, you know, Star Wars. The everyone jokes that, like, they could release a movie that's just the Star Wars logo and it would still make $100 million or something. Taylor Swift could just release dead noise, dead air, and boom, she can make money. Oh, wow. Well,
but now since the dust has settled and we are now standing in 2014.
Yes.
I was watching a lot of videos online of downloadable games to get for my DS or 3DS at the time, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I don't want to play a lot of the games that, you know, like the ones that are on like the NES store, Super Nintendo store, stuff like that. And a lot of people kept saying to play Shovel Knight. And I was looking at it and I'm like, oh, that reminds me of a lot of like the older NES games. And that's kind of right when I started collecting my NES collection. So I'm like, oh, this is kind of like a modern take on older games. It's getting a lot of good reviews. People are saying it's great. It's this little indie team that kind of just got people to, you know, invest in them. And they created something awesome. And there's going to be this plethora of DLC coming out over the next 6 years. And I was like, well, I'll download it. It was like $15 or something like that. And I was like, I'll try it out. And like, once I started it up, I'm like, all right, I love this. Like the first level, when you kick into Strike the Earth, like that is an awesome, like beginning song. I know we talked about with Doom, like that first little bit and the music kicking in and stuff like that. But when you start off and it says For Chivalry and then he starts going and that music kicks on, like that's like awesome adventure music. Like, you know what you need to do as you're going through it. And it's like, all right, yeah, I feel like I'm going to be messing some stuff up right now.
Now, I absolutely agree with the first impression this game makes. There's a huge degree of charm in just the concept of this game. And it really makes you think back in the days of the NES and the Sega Genesis. Video games seemed like they just got more weird concepts created. You know, the idea of a knight whose main weapon is a shovel, but he's still seen as like this heroic warrior. Like that's in 2014, I'm sure plenty of people were like, well, that probably sounds dumb. But like, that's what the early days of gaming were. It was, hey, a chubby Italian plumber who's jumping on dinosaurs. And that became the biggest thing in the world. You know, a lightning fast little critter fighting an obese scientist and his robots. You know, the wacky was what games were back then. And we entered this self-serious period for several years. So it was really cool, I think, in seeing in retrospect now that I'm playing this with hindsight, but I think his Shovel Knight's arrival and his kind of explosion into a popular indie gaming icon is a great thing for the industry.
Yeah, and it is cool, though, because like all of the knights themselves, they have distinct personalities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's Polar Knight, whether it's Spectre Knight, Plague Knight, King Knight, like they all have it, and then they all have unique pieces to them. So like understanding like this is Shovel Knight and his main thing is a shovel, like, I get it. It makes sense.
It's adorable.
Like, that's just his thing.
Yeah.
Well, I played it and beat it, and then I saw that it was coming out for the Wii U, so I bought it, played it, and beat it there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw it's coming out for the PS4, so I played it and beat it there. And the Vita, I played it and beat it there. And the Xbox One, I played it and beat it there. And the Switch, I played it and beat it there. And on Steam, I played it and beat it there.
So just to confirm, have you 100%ed and or platinumed and or whatever this game on every console that you mentioned?
So I have not platinumed it, but I have 100%ed all the stories, except for King Knight.
Okay.
Because King Knight, there's a couple pieces that I still need to get. It's collecting all the cards for the card game that's inside of it. Mm-hmm. But I have done a lot of the harder trophies inside of it, which is beat the entire game in under an hour and a half, beat the game by destroying all the checkpoints, some of those other more complicated ones. The hardest one, though, was the hour and a half one. I beat it in an hour 29 and 37 seconds.
Wow.
So I had like 23 seconds left to go before I would actually not get that achievement. And I was like, ugh.
Commendable. Yes. Okay. Well, so real quick, do you mind if I just throw out a quick little story summary? Because it's not a complicated story, but it does have a lot of like deep lore. And just to get our listeners up to speed. So Shovel Knight is the tale of a little short and stout little adventurer named Shovel Knight. And years before the game began, he and his friend Shield Knight, who herself was a warrior, and as her name says, her main weapon was a shield, kind of a female medieval Captain America, if you will. They liked roaming the land, having adventures, and collecting treasure. And one day they went to this mythical structure called the Tower of Fate to find what treasure was inside. But when they did, they unleashed something that trapped Shield Knight in the tower and threw Shovel Knight out of it. And so he retired from adventuring out of like despair because he lost his best friend. But then one day, years later, the Tower of Fate opens, and from it comes the evil Enchantress, who is this powerful witch, and her army of 8 powerful knights known as the Order of No Quarter. And as you were kind of mentioning before, they all kind of follow a certain stylistic theme. You mentioned Polar Knight, the ice-themed knight whose weapon is a giant snow shovel. There's Spectre Knight, who's a Grim Reaper type with a giant scythe. There's Tinkerer Knight, who is a little, very little man who builds contraptions that you have to combat. There's Propeller Knight, who flies through the skies. There is Plague Knight, who is good with throwing poisoned bombs. There is Mole Knight, who has some fire and ground type attacks, which he uses as he digs in his underground lair. There is King Knight, who has a golden suit of armor, and he is pompous AF.
And I will talk about King Knight then.
Yes. And then rounding them out, who am I forgetting?
Treasure Knight.
Treasure Knight, who kind of looks like a big daddy from Bioshock, and he sails the seas in a whale-shaped submarine and steals from people. So yes, the Order of No Quarter, they are very similar to Dr. Wily's robots or Mega Man. Like I said, they are your enemies that you have to fight as you try to free this kingdom from the grip of the Enchantress. And along the way, you'll come across some random adventurers who are like scattered across the map, and they'll randomly appear. The most important of which is Black Knight, who he is about your height and size, and he also wields a shovel blade. But he's got this kind of mysterious kind of set of goals and motivations that you find out throughout the game. I would compare him to Proto Man for Mega Man, honestly. But
that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. He's practically Proto Man.
Yeah. So that's the gist of the game. It's travel the land, defeat the evil knights, and get to the Tower of Fate to face off with Enchantress and maybe find out what happened to your friend Shield Knight.
And one cool thing, too, is when you play the DLCs, you actually learn a little bit more about the Order of No Quarter. Like, so, for instance, Treasure Knight. He's also, like, the treasurer of the Order of No Quarter. So he's responsible for, like, where all the funds go for, like, what they're doing and stuff like that. Like, it breaks it down more for, like, what each one of them actually does.
It's really amusing to consider that they have a thorough bureaucracy, even though they're just a gang of evil, like, you know, henchmen. I wonder, who's their human resources guy?
It's probably, I would probably say Spectre Knight on that one.
I could see that.
But yeah, so in like the Spectre Knight DLC, like you go, part of it is kind of recruiting the team for the Enchantress. But going back to what you're talking about with Shovel Knight and Shield Knight, they actually were romantically involved, which is one thing that like Black Knight hated you for, because he had romantic feelings for Shield Knight, but lost her hand to Shovel Knight.
Yes.
But he's been kind of protecting her efforts, you know, and making sure that nothing comes to harm, because it's very similar to, let's say, Lily James and Severus Snape.
That's a pretty good comparison. I do have to say that, like, the reveal throughout the game that when you finally find out what Black Knight's deal is and what he was fighting for, I would say I don't think it was handled that well. And it leads me to a question. So for this episode, what I specifically played was the first core Shovel Knight game, which is now known as Shovel Knight Shovel of Hope. So that was the original Kickstarter-funded game, and as you've been mentioning, over the years they've added DLC-based story campaigns where you play as some of the other characters from this world and you learn different things about the lore and background. So is Black Knight's true intentions and backstory something that you find out more in, say, Spectre of Torment, which is one DLC game, or maybe King of Cards, which is another?
Well, not really. He does appear in all of the DLCs.
Yes.
But the nice thing about him appearing is he comes off as a good guy. Where you know the character that you're playing as is the bad guy, where he comes off as trying to stop you from doing what you're doing.
Okay.
Which I thought was nice.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
So one interesting thing, though, with we're talking about Plague Knight, King Knight, and Spectre Knight, right? So those DLC characters that you got to play as were actually chosen by the backers. So leading up to when the game was coming out, they actually had a poll out there of who would you like to have DLC made for. So I'm wondering if they actually had the concepts for all of the knights and individual stories, or if they were just going to kind of tie each one of them to it. But the three that we got were the three that actually ended up winning those polls, which I thought was really cool to kind of leave it in the hands of the backers themselves.
Yeah, I wonder if there are design documents for the potential five other games that they probably had to prepare to make and didn't.
Yeah.
So that's pretty intriguing. I like that.
So one thing you'll also see too is in some artwork and art books and stuff like that they have of Shovel Knight, there's actually male and female versions of all the characters made too. Which if you have the treasure trove, you can actually gender swap any of the characters, which actually shows you the alternative version of what they would look like. So I thought that was a nice little added feature too, especially with getting the treasure trove and unlocking all the extra stuff that you get with it.
Yeah, that is really cool, actually. I know for a lot of players out there, you know, getting to customize your identity is something that means a lot. So that's really cool. It's really, really nice.
I mean, I could go on all day long talking about this game and all the little fun things and all the little pieces there. So breaking it down, you said that you've played Shovel of Hope.
Yes.
We had the Plague of Shadows, we had Spectre of Torment, and then we had the King of Cards. And the nice thing is the creators kind of broke them down as Shovel of Hope is the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
Plague of Shadows is the romance story. Spectre of Torment is the drama. And King of Cards is the comedy. And I thought that was a really cool way of breaking it down, because after playing all the games, you realize, like, yeah, they are all four big pieces to what makes, you know, a great story.
Nice. I am playing a little bit of Spectre of Torment now, just to dip more into the treasure trove collection of all the DLC pieces. And that one's very fun. And it's also fun in that the mechanics change. So I'm glad this isn't just like a palette swap, you know, like, oh, here's the game again, just you're playing as a different character. It's here's an entire new way to think about playing the game too. So
now you will get that in Plague of Shadows. You're practically playing through the same game, but it's like through Plague Knight's side of it, where it's like, he's doing everything slightly before Shovel Knight did. So it's like, this is what his story is about, how everything happened.
Okay.
The only big difference is that you have his arsenal of weapons, which gets very complex because you have different loadouts for creating different bombs and stuff like that, which is awesome. Like it adds more thought behind that character. But yeah, you practically are playing through the same game. But Spectre of Torment and King of Cards, those really are two completely different like campaigns themselves.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So Josh, I'm sure you are basically a master of this game at this point, but can you take me back to when you initially played it? What did you think about the gameplay, the mechanics? Talk to me about that.
This was like pixel perfect platforming, I thought. Everything felt right. It didn't feel too floaty. Didn't feel slippery. Everything felt like it was supposed to. Like it controlled the way you would expected it to. Shovel Knight is a little blocky, so he does have a little bit of weight to him. But you kind of do feel that when you're doing those down thrust moves, like the pogo attacks. But just going through, I know that there were some levels that just really get with you. And I'm looking at you, Propeller Knight stage. I don't know. I felt like not many games, and especially indie games, controlled as good as you expect them to. Because we've had a lot of games come out that were side-scrolling games or Metroidvanias or platformers and stuff like that that felt like it came right out of, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. And this pretty much felt like somebody like copied and pasted it. And I was like, okay, I'm completely good with this.
Nice.
And the arsenal that Shovel Knight has, all the different attacks that you can do, the invincibility that you get, different ways of traversing the levels too. Like, there's so many unique ways of doing it, and nothing feels overpowering, underpowering, or cheap.
Gotcha.
What did you think of Shovel Knight's controls and his arsenal and stuff like that?
So, my description of this game would honestly be it's the classic Mega Man games but fair. And what I mean by that yeah. is just like I would say I have been a Mega Man fan since a very early age when I first saw the game played at my cousin's house because they had a Nintendo. But I didn't have a Nintendo, my Mega Man fandom was kind of by proxy. Like, I was just so into the concept. I like had the toys. I watched the cartoon. But when it comes to the classic core Mega Man games, when I finally did get chances to play them, I found them punishingly hard to a degree that kind of broke my heart. I think the Mega Man X series is probably the best side-scrolling version of Mega Man, just in my personal opinion. And overall, my favorite is Legends. But like I said, fair Mega Man, like, it's the intensity, the atmosphere, and like the level exploration. But I think this melee combat based approach makes it a little bit more interesting. And for me, a little bit more just engaging, you know, like it's tough, but fair. There's a really nice learning curve to it. And as long as you're, you know, your wits are quick about you and you're kind of, you know, memorizing things and learning as you go, you're going to get through it pretty well. I will say that the final stages, the multiple levels of the Tower of Fate, really amp up the difficulty to a degree that was intense. That's where I was like, oh, whoa, where has this been the whole game? But overall, yeah, very enjoyable. Everything about it feels just simple and fun. And it doesn't take very long to master, which is nice, but you'll be surprised at how many things you will discover even after you think you have, like, the whole hang of it. You know, it's just that
right.
that kind of a game, and that's what I really enjoyed about it.
Yeah, going through, like I said, collecting all the suits, collecting mm-hmm. all the music notes, all of the weapons, all of the little perks and stuff like that that you get, all the little hidden areas, all the hidden bosses in the game too. Like, there's just so much to the game. Going through, especially with New Game Plus mode,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of differences in New Game Plus mode where you barely have any health. You have fewer checkpoints. Bosses do twice as much damage. Like, there's a lot of different things inside this game that, like, it's just crazy to think of. And going back to what I was talking about, the optional bosses. So there's like four or five optional bosses in the game. And they kind of come through where they might be hidden in a non-like main level, I would say. So like one of them is Mr. Hat.
Mm-hmm.
Did you fight Mr. Hat?
So yeah, like, there was a degree, I will say, of bosses when they sneak up on you. It caught me by surprise in like a bad way, because I always liked being really prepared when I would go into like an actual main level. You know, I would go visit the Fountain of the Troutful King, who gives you little potions that you can use to restore health and things like that, or have certain buffs. So yeah, if I accidentally, like with Hat Guy, if I accidentally came across a boss and I really wasn't prepared for it, it made it more intense and like anxious for me. I was like, oh no, you know.
Now I will say, you do not fish at the Tropo Kings area.
No.
Though you need to get one of the music notes, but how dare you fish in the Tropo Kings area?
Get your ass kicked.
That is disrespectful. But going back to the optional bosses, that's another one of those Kickstarter goals that they had. So during the Kickstarter, people who backed $1,000 or more were able to go to the studio to become a director for the day.
Ah.
And in the process of doing that, they were able to actually make a character to put in the game, and those people were created as bosses in the game.
Okay.
So the ones that were kind of done like the Hammer Bros style levels, those were the bosses. Those are the people who kind of backed the game for over $1,000, which I thought was pretty awesome there too.
You know, it makes sense in a way, because I was going to comment about how they didn't really feel that integrated into the plot of the game. And now I just realize, now that you say that, it's like, oh, they're not supposed to be important. They're just supposed to be challenges that have fun little, you know, mysteries behind them. So
however, if you play Spectre of Torment, it helps with some of them. And if you play King of Cards, it helps with the other ones. Like, it's so they are all tied into the story different ways.
Okay.
Now talking about more backing stuff though, backers of $200 or more actually made it into the Hall of Champions too. Which, did you pay the money to go into the Hall of Champions?
The Hall of Champions was one of my favorite levels in the game, because I love the atmosphere and I love the mechanic. It's basically a haunted museum, and there's ghosts who aren't affected by your actual attacks, but there are these giant light orbs, and when you strike them, they cast light in certain directions, and so you have to kind of bounce these orbs around the room until they catch the ghosts in their paths. And yeah, you basically free the museum from these ghosts.
So, here's where I'm going to hit you with some things, because you played it on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
In the Hall of Champions, there's a hidden room in the Xbox and PlayStation 4 version of the game.
Oh, okay.
If you go into the PlayStation 4 version, I'm trying to remember because it's been a while since I played it. If you get a scroll, I think it's a scroll that you get, or like a music sheet almost, where you have to go up to a mountain then once you get it. And the scroll has a hidden wanderer up there. So another hidden boss.
Okay.
The boss removes his cloak and it's Kratos.
Yeah. That's obviously the PlayStation version. Okay.
So the PlayStation version, you fight against Kratos. Before I jump into the next one, though, let me go back and talk about Kratos here for a little bit. So Corey Barlog, the creator of God of War and stuff like that, gave like the okays to do this. And after you're done, like, you get like a suit of armor that's very similar to like Kratos stuff, where he has like flames and stuff like that coming out of it. But it is actually canon in the new God of War thing before he goes to the new game that came out, the reboot.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually canon that he met Shovel Knight on his way to the new game. So, like, Shovel Knight's actually canon in the God of War story.
That's amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
So, now I'm trying to remember the Xbox One version, because this has been about a year or so since I've done this one. You go into the Hall of Champions, go into the hidden room, you get a scroll. You go, there's another hidden area that unlocks, and in the distance, you see a ship coming in, and the ship pulls up, and coming down from a rope are all three Battletoads.
Oh.
And you go through and you play an entire level in the Battletoad style.
And the side scrolling beat 'em up kind of.
Yep. You do the bikes. You do the whole hyper tunnel and stuff like that. And then you fight all three of them. At the end of it, you get another suit of armor that you do two hits, and then the third hit, a big fist comes out. So, like in the Battletoads fighting,
yeah,
you get it. So, but yeah, in the Xbox version, it's all Battletoads related. And you go up, and like some of the characters are talking about the Battletoads. That's a rare treasure, or something like that. Like, they keep like making puns about it and stuff, and it's like, this is awesome. Like. But yeah, it's like, oh, and you can keep going back and keep doing the hyper tunnel if you want to and stuff. But Yeah, so in the PlayStation 4 version, you get to fight Kratos. In the Xbox version, you get to fight the Battletoads and do Battletoads levels. Oh, and in the Battletoads level, if you pause the game, you get the infamous pause music as well from Battletoads, which I think is even better. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, man. That's... So, it's not exact, but it does take me back to Super Meat Boy and how he was able to, like, include other iconic Flash gaming characters and indie gaming characters, you know. I think it's really neat when games reach over and have, like, fun little additions. You know, Kratos, I think that's just a fun way to acknowledge, like, oh, another famous gaming warrior. And then Battletoads, it's like, oh, another iconic throwback to, you know, 8-bit platforming goodness and thing, and or action goodness, if you will. So that's really cool.
Right. Yeah, it's cool. Like, and then the Switch, well, all the Nintendo versions of it have it. They, instead of getting those special characters, they actually were the first ones to get the multiplayer mode. So the co-op mode.
Okay.
And to the game.
In addition to a co-op version, you want to also talk about something else that was added called Shovel Knight Showdown?
Yeah, so Shovel Knight Showdown is very similar. Well, I wouldn't say very similar to Super Smash Bros., but it's a fighting game, which has several different ways of playing it. You can fight to the death. You can be the first person to collect a certain amount of gems, or you can be the quickest person through a level, which are some different ways to be able to play the game. And it's just some fun party mode versions of it. And I thought it was a nice thing. That was just something that they recently added to not too long ago, which I was like, man, they just keep releasing content for this over and over again. So Yacht Club is so good. They're so nice.
I mean,
and they gave all this stuff away for free.
Yeah, this was their debut game, correct?
Yes.
And what a way to just come out of the gate like that, you know?
It's crazy that they just keep going and keep going. And like I said, this game's 6 years old and they just released the final piece of content for it before they're going to start working on new games. But man, what a run it had though. Not many games. I mean, this game had a longer run than Destiny. Do you know what I mean?
Destiny, the game that was acclaimed. The game that was supposed to last 10 years. And then 3 years in, they gave it a sequel. Oh, maybe a future episode. Maybe. If we can actually play it, I don't know.
Yeah, probably not. But I want to talk, before we kind of go all over the place, though, we talked about King Knight, mm-hmm. right? And we said about how each character has their own thing about them. That each one of them, like, you know, Polar Knight has a snow shovel, Propeller Knight has giant propellers, so on and so on. Mm-hmm. So what does King Knight have? Like, what is a King Knight? And his whole story is he's just a bratty kid. Like, he's like an older guy, probably in like his late 20s, early 30s, lives with his parents, like lives with his mom, and is like, Mom, I'm not a prince anymore. I'm a king. I'm going to be a king. And like, that's what his whole thing is. So he joins into this card tournament and is trying to, because if you win this card tournament, you get claimed as the king of cards. That's how he's going to become a king, is through this whole thing. But everything he does, he's just like a spiteful teenager about it. Like, he's like, oh, look, this is ridiculous. This is stupid. Like, he's like just constantly keeps like acting like he hasn't grown up. And it's just hilarious because like he, and it's the fight that he's like, not to spoil too much, but like the end of his story is right before, like, so the end of his story, Shovel Knight comes through the door to fight him, and it's just like, oh my god, like, it's just so perfect the way that they set him up to be like just this little whiny kid, but he's like a grown adult.
He's like the Angelica Pickles of the knights.
Yeah.
that's great.
Well, yeah, I'm just, oh man.
So yeah, this was released to critical acclaim and kind of, you know, an overnight gaming sensation in its own right. Shovel Knight's gone on to cameo in some games. He popped up in Yooka-Laylee, which I think was kind of done as like a nod to Yooka-Laylee also being a Kickstarter success. It was just a cute little like, oh, I'm Shovel Knight and I'm just like you. You know, I'm a revival of a certain kind of game brought about by crowdfunding.
Talking about games that Shovel Knight's appeared in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and we talk about him being, you know, it's this little indie hit sensation, but he's in Runbow, he's in Star Mazer, Road Redemption, Move or Die, Dino Run DX, Ghost Police, Indivisible, Blaster Master Zero, Runner 3, Indie Pogo, Blade Strangers, Mutant Mud Super Challenge, Rival of Athers, Puzzle Depot, Sea Wars, Creepy Castle, Azdad, Brawlhalla. Like, he's Riverbot. Like, he's in all these games. And he's made special cameos in, like, Bloodstained. He was in an anime series that was on the internet.
What?
Called Tales of Atheron. Yeah. He was in Pixel Noir. Like we said, he was in Yooka-Laylee. Asgard Defenders, Fight Night, Enter the Gungeon. His shovel's actually in it as a weapon. But this little indie sensation that started off on the Nintendo consoles gets one of the highest praises of an indie game.
I think I know what you're going for. Say it.
And he is in Super Smash Brothers
as
a trophy.
Yes.
Like, and a Mii costume, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, and his own amiibo, which that's pretty cool. I think there's not many series outside of mainline Nintendo games that got their own amiibos, and the fact that Shovel Knight got one is just, like you said, the highest of praise.
Yeah, like the fact that Nintendo has kind of gave the tip of the hat to Yacht Club to not only support them in the thing. I mean, it's him and Sans from Undertale, I think, are the only like indie like Smash hits that are inside of Smash Bros.
Oh, don't forget characters from there's this one game, I think it's called Bullface. Or wait, maybe it's Mugnose. Anyway, it's a difficult video game. I think one of my friends beat it. I don't know. Anyway.
I think the one you're talking about is Fire Emblem.
Oh, yes. Because it was a real success when indie darling Fire Emblem got his own character in the game.
Overall, with the story, Tom, what'd you think of the conclusion of the Shovel Knight and Shield Knight story? I know that there were some nice pieces in there with like the dream sequences and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that I thought were pretty awesome callbacks to certain games. I know that they used a lot of inspiration from like Mother 3 for that kind of stuff to add like what he's going through in this time. But what did you think of overall the story, the actual culmination of everything that happened between the Order of No Quarter, Enchantress, and Shovel Knight?
I think it was all very charming and very well drawn out. The ultimate reveal that Enchantress is actually Shield Knight, who is under a curse from the amulet that she took when her and Shovel Knight were on their initial adventure. It's a nice kind of full circle reveal. And you have this moment where Shield Knight looks like she heroically sacrifices herself so that Black Knight and Shovel Knight can escape the Tower of Fate. And then at the very end, you know, Shovel Knight, he's passed out from his adventures near his traditional campfire. And you see an injured Shield Knight like walk in to his campfire and sit down next to him and fall asleep. It's both a perfect ending and an interesting cliffhanger, because I would like to see where this goes with the potential that, you know, these two adventurers have been reunited. And I want to see what their next adventure might hold.
Yeah, one of my favorite things was the dream sequences where they all ended with her falling and you trying to catch her. Sometimes you just fell a little short. Sometimes you as soon as you did, you woke up,
mm-hmm.
stuff along those lines. And the way that it ends when she becomes Shield Knight again and she's falling and the whole thing is him going and actually doing the catch. It's such a nice callback to all of those scenes. It's just a nice way of kind of coming full circle.
It's
from everything that we've seen.
It's good writing. It's good visuals. Absolutely. I agree completely. So Josh, kind of final thoughts, what would you say overall how would you pitch Shovel Knight to anyone who might be interested in this game?
If you want an awesome platformer that has an amazing story, a lovable band of characters, and so much extra stuff inside of it, like for $25, this game is beyond worth it. The fact that you're getting 4 to 5 games for $25, and these are, you know, 7 to 10 hour long campaigns mostly, like, you would be a fool not to own this game.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Much in the same way that Hollow Knight kind of brought me into a world of side-scrolling action games that were big when I didn't have certain kind of consoles growing up and kind of gave me a refined version of that experience, this gave me the kind of perfect way to play through games of the 8-bit era that I had always admired, never could fully get my hands on, but here was like an adventure that I could handle on my own and really enjoy throughout. So, absolute must play.
So buy it or we'll be angry with you.
He will get an individualized letter of anger from Josh.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with The Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.